This is continuing the memorandum with regard to the visit with the students. I said that in Russia, Leningrad was really a more interesting place to visit. But the people were more outgoing there, since they were not much under control and domination of the central government. I also said that in terms of beautiful cities, that they would find that Prague and Warsaw had much more architectural beauty than did Moscow. I made this point because I was speaking directly to one of the students who said he was a student of architecture. In fact, there were two who said they were studying architecture, and I thought they would be interested in knowing about it. But the most important point I made about Russia was that as they came, as you went across the country, that they should go to places like Novosibirsk, a raw new city in the heart of the country of Siberia, and Samarkand in Asian Russia, where the people were Asian rather than Russian. One of them asked whether it would be possible to get a chance to visas to such cities, and I said I was sure they wouldn't. If any of them took a trip to Russia and wanted to contact my office, I would help out. This seemed to get a little chuckle from them. I then moved back to the problem, to my major theme, that what really mattered in the world were people rather than cities and air and water and all the other things that were material. And I said, for example, Haiti, of all the countries I have visited in Latin America, is probably the poorest, with Bolivia maybe slightly poor. But that the Haitians, as I recalled from 1955, while they were poor, had a dignity and a graciousness and a grace, which was very moving, and that I always had wanted to return, not because there was anything in Haiti worth seeing in terms of cities or food, good food, and so forth, but because the people had such character. I then made this same point again with regard to the people I had seen in Asia, in India, and returned again to the United States, where I again emphasized the importance of their not becoming alienated from the people of this country, its great variety. I expressed distress that on the college campuses, the blacks and whites, while they now go to school together, have less contact with each other than they had when they weren't going to go to school together on some of our major campuses. This seemed to get through, although none of them had much to say. One of them responded specifically. By this time, the group around me had begun to get considerably larger. I would say that the original group of approximately 8 to 10 had now become perhaps 30. And some of those who seemed to be more leader types and older began to take part in the conversation. One spoke up, said, I hope you realize that we're willing to die for what we believe in, close quote. I said, I certainly realize that. You realize that many of us, when we were your age, were also willing to die for what we believe in, and are willing to do so today. The point is that we are trying to build a world in which you will not have to die for what you believe in which you're able to live for it. I put in one brief comment with regard to the point I had made in the press conference, that while we had great differences with the Russians, we had to find a way to limit nuclear arms. But I had hope that we could make some progress in that direction. They seemed to have very little interest in that subject. Perhaps it was because we moved through so fast, and perhaps because they were overawed by the whole incident. Then another spoke up and said, I don't think you... No, then another spoke up and said, we're not interested in what Prague looks like. We're interested in what kind of a life we build in the United States. I said the whole purpose of my discussing Prague and other places was not to discuss the city, but the people. For the next 25 years, the world is going to get much smaller. You're going to be living in all parts of the world. And it is vitally important that you know and appreciate appreciate and understand people every place, wherever they are, and particularly understand the people in your own country. I said, I know that the great emphasis that is currently being put on the environment, the necessity to have clean air, clean water, clean streets. I said, as you know, we have a very bold program going further than any program has ever gone before to deal with some of these subjects. But I want to leave just one thought with you. That cleaning up the air and the water and the streets is not going to solve some of the deep problems you really are going to solve, the deepest problems that concern us all. Those are material problems. They must be solved. They are terribly important. We must have clean air and clean water. We must make the country more beautiful and remove the ugly blotches that our modern society has put on the face of the earth. But you must remember that something that is completely clean can also be completely sterile, without spirit. What we all must think about is why we are here. What are those elements of the spirit which really matter? And here again, I return to my theme of thinking about people rather than about places, about things. I said candidly and honestly that I didn't have the answer, but that I knew that young people today were searching, as I was searching 40 years ago, for an answer to this problem. I just wanted to be sure that all of them realized that ending the war and cleaning up the streets and the air and the water was not going to solve spiritual hunger, which all of us have, which of course has been the great mystery of life from the beginning of time. Toward the last 20 minutes of the conversation, Manola nudged me a couple of times and said that I had a telephone call in the car. I, of course, smiled and said, let it wait. I realized the Secret Service was becoming more and more concerned as they saw the crowd begin to mount and probably feared that some of the more active leaders would get word of my visit and descend upon us. By this time, the dawn was upon us. First rays of the sun began to show, and they began to climb up over the Washington Monument. And I said I had to go, shook hands with those nearest to me, and walked down the steps. A bearded fellow from Detroit was taking a picture as I began to get into the car. I asked him if he wouldn't like to get in the picture. He stepped over with me, and I said, look, I'll have the president's doctor take a picture, and DaCosta took the picture. He seemed to be quite delighted. It was, in fact, the broadest smile that I received while I was on the entire visit. The broadest smile that I saw on the entire visit. As I left him, I said, you know, I came back to the theme I had made up above, and I knew that he had come a long way for this event. That I knew too that he and his colleagues were terribly frustrated and angry about our policy and opposed to it. I said, I just hope your opposition doesn't turn into a blind hatred of the country. But remember, this is a great country with all of its faults. I said, if you have any doubt about it, go down to the passport office and you won't see many people lining up to get out of the country.